Hi, I'm Mike DeWitt. It's January 1st, 2007, and this is Four Jokes to Live By. At this time of year, individuals and organizations are busy making grand new plans for the new year, many of which won't last through the end of the week. And in almost every case, the failed resolution or plan ran afoul of one of four key principles. What's interesting is that each of these principles can be found in the punchline of a classic joke. So rather than just tell you, here are the principles and don't do this, I'm going to give you the joke and then talk a little bit about why you shouldn't do that and some ways to avoid the problems. It's New Year's Eve, 1933, Newport Beach, Rhode Island. It's the middle of the Depression, but not for the people here. We're at a swank party, and over in the corner, a nondescript but impeccably dressed man is speaking to a lovely young woman. They chat for some time, after which the man says, "My dear, I'm completely captivated by your charms. I'm not a very good-looking man, but I am exceedingly wealthy, and I was wondering if you would sleep with me tonight, one night, for the sum of $1 million. She gives him a strange look, but he says, "No, I'm in earnest," as he reaches into his coat pocket. "I'll write you the check now. What do you say?" She scrunches up her face, thinks hard, and then finally says, "Okay, I'll do it." He smiles back at her and says, "Well, would you do it for $100? All the blood drains from the woman's face, only to return a moment later in triple. "Sir," she says, "what kind of a woman do you think I am?" "Madam," he sneers, "we've already established the principle. Now we're merely haggling price." I think most of our regrets come about because we make decisions that seem opportune at the time, but ultimately went against some of our core principles. Our situation may not be as extreme as the woman's in the story. It might be something simple as taking a job that required you to do a lot of travel and made you miss key events in your family's lives. But I think if you look back at the things you regret, you'll see that this makes sense. So, how to avoid it? It's pretty simple. All you have to do is ask yourself two questions. Who am I, and what am I doing here? That may seem pretty trite, but if I asked you that question right now, who are you, and what are you doing here, how would you answer me? Go ahead, give it a try. And I'm not looking for something like, "I'm a commuter sitting in traffic on the Eisenhower Expressway." I'm looking for something a little bit deeper. When I say, "Who are you, and what are you doing here?" it refers to who are you as your core identity as a person, and what are you doing here on Earth? Have you ever asked yourself these questions? Go ahead, try it now. It's a good car safe activity. You probably won't be satisfied with the first couple of attempts, so try it again. You ever remember a situation where you found yourself wondering if you were in a dream? Did you know one of the best ways to tell if you're dreaming is to look at your watch or a clock? Because if you're dreaming, generally they don't run. These questions have kind of the same effect as you're going through life, and if you're not paying attention to what you're doing, if you ask yourself these questions in any situation, it'll probably give you a better perspective on who you are and what you're doing. Here's a great example of a "who am I and what am I doing here" moment in the classic holiday movie, It's a Wonderful Life. It happens about, about 5.5 hours? No, halfway through the movie. And the scene begins with Mr. Potter lighting a cigar for George, and he's trying to convince him to come to work for him. And he goes through a wonderful mini-seminar on negotiating and persuasion, but finally he says, "George, wouldn't you like to live in the nicest house in town? Buy your wife a lot of fine clothes? A couple of business trips to New York a year? Maybe even Europe?" And George starts to waver and buckle. And after a little bit more conversation, he says, "Can I have a little bit more time, Mr. Potter?" And Potter says, sure, you go home and talk it over with your wife. I'll just draw up the papers." And George says, "Thanks, Mr. Potter," and reaches out and shakes his hand, and then he has that moment. You know, you see the look on his face changes, and you can feel him thinking, "Who am I, and what am I doing here?" And he pulls his hand away, and he looks at it, and then he wipes it on his coat, and then goes into a diatribe about Potter trying to manipulate him, and slams the door and leaves. And I think most of his anger was directed at himself, because he realized that he had forgotten who he was and what he was doing here. On to the second joke. It's a quiet summer evening on a small lake deep in the north woods of Wisconsin. Two fishermen are sitting in their cabin enjoying a drink after a successful day, when suddenly there's a huge racket and they hear the roar of a giant grizzly bear. The grizzly starts beating at the door of the cabin, and the hunters suddenly start running around in a panic. They're running around trying to find things to shove in front of the door, trying to hold the door, when suddenly one of them stands stock still, then walks over into his duffel bag and gets out a pair of track shoes. The other guy looks at him bewilderedly and says, "What do you think you're doing? You can't outrun a giant grizzly bear." And the guy putting on the shoes says, "I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you." What's the point of that joke? It could go in several directions, but I think the point that's illustrated here is to focus on the solution and not the problem. Whether it's that New Year's resolution to lose that spare tire, or the sales manager saying, "We've got to make more sales or we're going to go out of business." Focusing on the problem and not the solution usually leads to bad results. Oftentimes this comes from really accepting somebody else's purpose and goals. So the key here is that you need to set goals that are consistent with your purpose, which means it'd be good to know your purpose in the first place, and then to be flexible. Most goals don't get accomplished in a day, and oftentimes what happens is circumstances change, but the goal doesn't, and people are suddenly not moving towards their purpose, and so either consciously or subconsciously they let the goal drop, and that New Year's workout club membership goes unused by February, and that great business plan that we drew up for this initiative is now collecting dust in a file cabinet. One person who understood this concept of being flexible at your goals but not about your principles was Ronald Reagan. Long before he became president of the United States, he was president of the Screen Actors Guild and learned how to negotiate by going up against the studio moguls in Hollywood, the toughest negotiators on the planet. When he became president, he was up against longtime leaders of the House and Senate of the Democratic Party, and they were in no mood to compromise. But in both cases, Reagan got things done by following a simple edict. Stake out the moral high ground, then cut a deal. Most times in your life when you have a goal, it's not a straight line to get there. You'll have to figure out, because circumstances are changing, what to compromise on and what not to compromise on. And by following Reagan's way of staking out the moral high ground, knowing who you are and what you're doing here, you'll make better choices along the way. And focus on the solution. It's 3 a.m. and a police car is slowly rolling down a street in Tempe, Arizona, when all of a sudden the policeman notices a man on all fours crawling around under a street lamp. Cop rolls down his window and says, "Excuse me, sir, what are you doing?" Guy says, "I'm working for my car keys I dropped when I was opening the door." Cop says, "But, sir, there's no car. Where are you parked?" Guy points down the door. He says, "I'm over there." And cop says, "Then why are you looking over here?" Drunk says, "Just light's better here." And you might think, "Hey, I don't do that." But you might be surprised how much of that kind of behavior goes on in a different context all the time. How many times has somebody asked you why you do something, and you say, "Well, I've always done it that way." Or we fall into the trap of what Charlie Munger, the second-in-command at Berkshire Hathaway, likes to call the man with a hammer syndrome. And that is that to a man with a hammer, all the world looks like a nail. Almost any goal we are trying to accomplish requires us to do something new, something we haven't done, to move out of that man with a hammer mindset. Now the good news is that just about every problem you're ever going to have has always already been solved by somebody else. The trick is, it just hasn't been solved in your specific context. Think about it. Guys like Ray Kroc made billions simply by taking the same concept and moving it from one geographical context to the next. Things like Scrum, a great new concept in software development, is nothing more than taking lean manufacturing concepts and moving them into developing not widgets, but code. The key here is to identify limiting assumptions that you've added that aren't really central to the goal you're trying to accomplish. And again, this goes back to being flexible and focusing on purpose. But if you get those assumptions out on the table, you'll find some of them are invalid. And by getting rid of those assumptions, you can often find alternative solutions that are much better than anything you could have imagined earlier. Sometimes it's easy as saying, who are we? And what are we doing here? Which brings us to the final joke. How many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb really has to want to change. Scoff if you will, but how many women have entered relationships saying, yeah, he's not much right now, but I'll shape him up, only to find out they married a light bulb? One of the counterintuitive conclusions of the research that went into the book Good to Great was something called First Who, Then What, and author Jim Collins said it's important to have the right people on the bus before you start driving, because you may not know where you're going to get to. And I think most hiring procedures in most companies in the U.S. are really designed to get light bulbs on the bus. We need this many years of this type of experience in this industry and with these tools and such and such and such. And we don't realize that those specifications are driving at getting us people whose core identity, right? Who am I and what am I doing here, is focused on doing one specific thing, not trying to help accomplish some larger company goal. Now you might say, but Mike, I'm not a hiring manager. How does this apply to me? Well, if your life's purpose or one of your goals requires actions of other people, and pretty much because every goal is doing something new, you probably do need to learn somebody or work with somebody, you've got to assess their light bulbiness with respect to that goal and what you're trying to accomplish. Similarly, when you set a new goal, you've got to test your own light bulbiness with respect to that goal. And again, we go back and say, if it doesn't fit with who I am and what I'm doing here, chances are you're going to beat a light bulb and you will not accomplish the goal. So there you have it, 4 jokes to live by. The key takeaways? Ask yourself regularly, who am I and what am I doing here? Set goals that are consistent with those principles, but then be flexible and focus on the solution. Don't be a man with a hammer. Your problem's already been solved. Examine your assumptions to open yourself up to more possibilities. And finally, don't try to perform therapy on a light bulb. Look for them and be aware of where those light bulbs are in your relationships and in your beliefs. I'm Mike DeWitt. Thanks for listening.